Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
Today's podcast is an overview of where we are and the prediction about where we are heading and when we're going to get there. First of all, we had the greatest distortion of interest rates and money supply growth in history. And that engendered the greatest triumvirate of asset bubbles in stocks, bonds, and real estate in history, all existing at the same time. And the warping and distortion of interest rates, borrowing costs, and money supply growth led to the most over-leveraged global economy in history, with record inflation, 20% if you count it accurately, which forced an unprecedented global monetary tightening to occur. So let's put some data on this contention of mine. Money supply growth and interest rate manipulation. Let's talk about that. In the U.S., there was an $8.2 trillion increase in the base money supply, which went from $800 billion to $9 trillion since the global financial crisis. Borrowing costs, the intra-bank lending rate, also known as the Fed funds rate, was below 1% for 10 of the last 14 years. Global central bank balance sheets were 8% of GDP prior to 2000. Now they're 47% of GDP. That is the data behind how bad global central banks were when it came to manipulating interest rates and the money supply. And speaking of the money supply, M2 money supply shot up by 42% in 2 years, went from $15.3 trillion at the start of 2020 to $21.7 trillion by March of 22. That's a $6.4 trillion or 42% increase in 2 years. And the average increase prior to the pandemic in the money supply was 4%. And let's talk about what that manipulation in money supply and interest rates did to asset prices. Well, the equity bubble is self-evident. Total market cap of equities as a percentage of the economy was 200% at the start of 2022. It was 105% at the start of the global financial crisis. A doubling in the percent of valuation of equities as compared to the economy. It was 100% increase in that metric. That's how far ahead we were when it comes to the equity bubble, far out of the boundaries of the twilight zone. Bond bubble. Was there a bond bubble? Let's just look at this one figure. $17 trillion worth of negative yielding debt in the world. Negative yielding debt was something unimaginable from the Stone Age all the way to 2014. No one would ever conceive of getting paid to borrow money until 2014. But that's what the distortion in interest rates came to. People were, you know, especially in Europe and in Japan, issuing debt, both corporate debt and government debt, issuing debt and getting paid to borrow. Real estate bubble. The home price to income ratio is higher today than the peak in 2005. Mortgage servicing costs, which is the, you look at the principal and interest, as a percentage of household income is higher today, the average mortgage, higher today than in the global financial crisis, that great bubble. And of course, there's ancillary bubbles in, you know, cryptocurrencies and autos and private equity. But that's just to mention the big three and a couple of the ancillary bubbles. Now, when you take interest rates that low, you get a massive amount of debt to be taken on because money is almost free. So total financial debt in the United States is 263% of GDP. In 2007, it was 227% of GDP. And people like to say, well, it's just government debt, so it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter because the government doesn't have any money. They have to issue bonds, which are purchased by the private sector. And no, they can't be just monetized away by the Federal Reserve so easily because of the inflation that we have. 9% inflation a few months ago, now it's 5%, but still 2.5 times where it should be, according to the Fed, which is 2. I think it should be 0. I think a nice inflation rate is 0. But the Fed likes 2. And so does every other central bank on the planet, not so coincidentally. But this is not just government debt. U.S. non-financial business debt is now 75.8% of GDP. In 2007, it was 68.7% of GDP. The Institute of International Finance says global debt surged to $305 trillion recently. That's $45 trillion higher than it was before the COVID pandemic. That is 350% of GDP. That's 25% higher, not 25 percentage points higher, 25% higher than the pre-global financial crisis figure of 278% of GDP. And every sector of global debt as a percentage of GDP has gone up. Governments, households, financial, non-financial, corporate debt, all higher than it was in the global, you know, heading into the global financial crisis. So these asset bubbles, all the debt, distortion of interest rates, all this is now caused inflation to run to a 40-year high throughout the developed world. And again, if one was to be honest and calculate it accurately, inflation is now at a all-time record high. So that, of course, has brought central banks, you know, it forced them into one of the most aggressive tightening monetary policy regimes ever. So the Fed funds rate was negative from 2008 to 2022. 14 years worth of negative real borrowing costs. Today, the real Fed funds rate turned positive in May. Now, as a reference, it was negative 8.3% in 2022. That is one of the fastest rate of change in real interest rates, if not the fastest in the history of mankind. Negative 8.3% in the United States to a positive, slightly positive 0.1% in just a matter of a year. 80% of global central banks have raised interest rates recently. U.S. rates are now as high as they were at the start of the global financial crisis. It took them 2 years to get from 1% to 5.25% from 2004 to 2006. It took 1 year to get them from 0 to 5.25%. So it's, again, one of the fastest rate of change of nominal interest rate increases ever. And now we're going to get, in addition to the monetary tightening, we're going to get fiscal tightening, which are spending cuts, when the debt ceiling gets raised. So it's going to actually become QT on steroids. Replenishing the Treasury General account is going to exacerbate the current QT program. So QT is draining reserves from the banking system. When the Fed has to sell, I'm sorry, when the Treasury sells debt to the public, they're going to take money from the banking system, and that's going to be retired and sit on the fallow at the Fed's at the Eccles building at the Fed, this credit. So it's going to be QT on steroids. And then, of course, we have the lagged effect of those 525 basis points in rate hikes since March of 22. 46% of banks are now tightening lending standards, which is adding to the monetary tightening. 30-year fixed rate mortgages have been below the current 5.1% T-bill rate since 2010. So banks can't raise deposits, the money they give on deposit rates to match income on assets, otherwise they'll be insolvent. So that leads to bank runs, bank closures, stress in the financial sector, and that leads to less credit creation, which adds to the monetary tightening and fiscal tightening too, which is coming very, very shortly. So you say, you know, Michael, you paint a good picture, but why hasn't the market and economy collapsed yet? Well, I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to that right now. So since the start of 2020, the M2 money supply was $15.3 trillion. And in March of 2022, it shot up to $21.7 trillion. That is a $6.4 trillion or 42% increase in 2 years in the broader aggregate of M2 money supply. Prior to the pandemic, such an increase was 4%, as I mentioned earlier in this podcast. In March of 23, the banking system started to falter. Well, let me backtrack for a second. Why I reiterated that point is because there's a tremendous amount of liquidity still in the system that has to be drained. Now, money supply is shrinking year over year by M2 by 4.2%. But there's a lot of work to be done. So that liquidity is still out there, but the rate of change is negative and it's coming down fast. Okay, March of 23, the banking system started to falter, March of this year. And that caused the Fed to launch the BTFP, the Bank Term Funding Program, which is $400 billion in 2 weeks of what I call QE Lite. That helped hold this collapse in abeyance. So not only do you have the excess money sloshing around from the creation of M2 going up 42%, but you have the Bank Term Funding Program, which was $400 billion in QE Lite. It's not QE, it's QE Lite, because these are loans at par that have to be paid back. So you have the money supply growth that was there, coming down, but it's still there. You have the BTFP, $400 billion in 2 weeks. And then you have the emptying of the TGA, which is another form of QE. That dumped hundreds of billions, TGA being the Treasury General Account, which is hundreds of billions of fallow dollars that are sitting at the Fed that are coming into the economy through the Treasury to make good on their obligations while we're waiting for the debt ceiling to get raised. Now, all three of those things should change, and I mean soon. The TGA should be replenished as soon as the debt deal is under agreement. And by the way, if there is no agreement, I think there is a 1% chance of that happening. It's not going to happen soon. It's not going to be easy. But there's a 99% chance that it gets done. But if it doesn't get done, that's not exactly good news for risk assets. But once it does get done, there's a huge change in the amount of QT. QT is going to be on steroids, be a very sharp draining of liquidity in the banking system and in reserves. The BTFP shot up in those 2 weeks by $400 billion, but now it's, you know, draining. It's attenuating. So if you look at those two things, I think that liquidity is going to tighten up significantly in the next few weeks. So all of the 20 components of my inflation, deflation, and economic cycle model are flashing amber, meaning that we are in a period of disinflation, sector two in the IDEC investment spectrum, which is disinflation and slowing economic growth. And they also indicate that we are absolutely heading for a condition of deflation and recession. I think it happens sometime between now. And when I mean now, I mean after the debt ceiling gets raised and the TGA has to be refilled, the TGA has to be replenished. That would be a very good opportunity for the liquidity to get drained out of the system very quickly. QT on steroids. Sometime between now and March of 2024. That's the time frame that the model now predicts will be for this second leg of the economy and market to falter. The decline in the S&P 500 could be anywhere between 30 and 40%. From here, not in total. I mean, the S&P is still down 15%. Just so we get this straight. The Russell 2000 and the equal weight S&P 500 are unchanged on the year, in case anybody thinks, you know, because NVIDIA is up a lot, that they're missing out on the boat. All right, I'm not buying NVIDIA. I'm not buying NVIDIA here. It's not going to happen. It is not the right sector for the economy to be in to own some high-flying AI tech stock. By the way, NVIDIA is down. Their revenue is down 13% year over year, but the trailing PE is 170 times for a company that's losing revenue year over year. Now, I know there's a lot of hype about this AI. I plan on buying AI stocks when the economy stops waxing towards recession. It's a very dangerous time to buy something like that now. Mark my words, I'll be correct. So the Russell 2000 and equal weight S&P 500 are unchanged in the year. The S&P 500 is still down 15% from its end of year 21, start of 22 high. The NASDAQ's down 18% since the same time frame. So there's no reason to have FOMO here. Okay? This is the time to prepare for what's next, which is a condition of disinflation and slowing economic growth, metastasizing and morphing into one that is deflationary and recessionary. Now, there's two outcomes that could happen. We could have a deflationary recession slash depression, or we could have intractable inflation. You're probably going to get both at different times. I think first you're going to get that deflationary depression, and then after that, you're going to get intractable inflation. The inflation, deflation, economic cycle model is ideal for identifying both conditions and allocating in the correct style factors, sectors, and asset classes for each scenario. The buy and hold 60-40 portfolio is dead. So is chasing a handful of AI stocks at the peak of a momentum-driven frenzy. Stick with a winning process.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.